People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. And jazz is the subject today, and in fact this week, because my guest is Kyle Shepherd, a leading South African pianist and film score composer celebrated for his distinctive style that transcends genres. And he was born in Cape Town and began playing the piano as a teenager, drawing inspiration from the jazz and South African music he encountered at Abdullah Ibrahim's M7 Music School, where his mother, Michelle Shepherd, worked as a teacher and an administrator. And he's the recipient of numerous accolades, including Standard Bank Young Artist for Jazz and UNISA Piano Competition winner. He's performed in 36 countries, gracing prestigious stages such as the Sydney Opera House, Carnegie Hall's Zenkel Theatre, and theatres in Paris as well. He's also released 7 acclaimed jazz albums and composed for film and television. So there's lots to find out about you, Carl. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
We were reminiscing just now, Kyle, because you said you thought you'd met me before, and I knew I had met you because you were one of the very first winners in the jazz category of the FMR Bursary Trust Award, and that would have been back in 2005, 2006, somewhere around there.
That's correct, and what worries me about that is that that was 20 years ago.
Yes, you see.
And I was obviously just a teenager and in a sense, starting out.
You just left school, hadn't you, I think, when that competition happened?
Just left school, yeah. I matriculated in 05.
Okay.
And we're not sure if it was 05 or 06. So
I think it was 06.
Yeah. So that was really the beginning stages of my career. I had only been playing the piano for just a couple of years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a tremendous sort of boost and encouraging moment to have won the FMR. But it was called the Travel Award back then.
It was back then.
Yes.
You're quite right.
Yes.
It was because it involved travel.
Yes.
It sent you,
and there was,
sent you off somewhere.
The prize was sending us wherever we chose, just for a brief period.
Can you remember where you were?
Yes. So I used the prize to go to the North Sea Jazz Festival, attend back in Rotterdam.
Right.
And of course, there I got to hear really the jazz greats, Herbie Hancock, Brad Mehldau, Wayne Shorter, Pat Metheny.
An experience for a young man.
Yes. So as a, would it be, 18-year-old, that was kind of mind-blowing, eye-opening. And of course, I'd been listening to these artists on record, on CD at that time. Yeah, those were the days of CDs, just to give you an idea. So that was a milestone.
But it's interesting, Carl, that you remember that so affectionately, so early in your career, because as I said, you've won so many awards since. Mm. It would take us most of the program if I read them all out. But let's just, before we talk about what you're up to now and your distinctive style and all that I mentioned just now, and you were playing the piano as a young man, so I'd like to know how it started. How did you start in music?
So what some people may or may not know is that my first instrument is the violin.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I started taking classical music lessons at the age of 5 and sort of painstakingly went through all the grade systems.
It is, especially the violin.
Yeah.
It's particularly difficult.
And a very strict teacher and the whole...
Good.
The cliche.
Yes.
And I must say, when I sort of got to 15 years old, 16 years old, I think I was a little bit fed up with it because, and today I listen to a lot of classical music and in my own small way practice Bach and so on the piano, but not for public consumption.
Okay.
So I say that with respect. But, as a sort of teenager, I heard jazz and I heard improvisation, and that really... really grabbed me. And at the time, as you mentioned, my mother had been working at Abdullah Ibrahim's school. It was in Parliament Street in Cape Town, not far from where we are now. And I had heard him play very often. If your mom's working and you're getting tickets every...
Yes.
And he used to play... There were times where he was playing every weekend. at the warehouse, a place called the Warehouse in Greenpoint, also not far from me. And for me, legendary concerts to have heard. And then I remember telling people, my musician friends, you know, teenagers, I was, that's what I think I want to do. And then the snowball effect sort of really happened when I switched instruments because I was so engaged with it. And then I was playing professionally within a year or two, you know.
This is when you switched to the piano?
Yes, yes.
So within a year, you were playing professionally on the piano?
Yes, yes. So
there was obviously a talent there.
A natural affinity for it, you know. I remember a lot of my friends at high school were so upset with me because I would spend so much time at school practicing, you know, whereas before I was very social.
Because you didn't like the violin.
And I say this with all respect to the instrument.
But look, the thing is, it was, as you hinted, it was a good background for you.
Yes.
The whole
yes.
classical training.
Absolutely. So I can read music and having those years in classical music and playing in orchestras and Eisteddfods and the whole thing now serves me fantastically well as a film score composer. So a lot of my scores is I'm writing orchestral music, sort of modern score music. So not on the level of, let's say, John Williams. So modern film scoring is much more minimal, you know.
Okay. And when you do write, or we'll get to this later possibly, but just while we're talking about it, when you do write a film score, what sort of size orchestra do you use? Do you use a proper orchestra or are you using computers?
Yes, so it varies. Often it's determined by things like budget and directors and producers. So when I work for Netflix, BBC, or whatever, it's really determined by all these external factors.
Yes.
But generally, the modern film score sound, you know, sort of pioneered by people like Hans Zimmer and Danny Elfman, and in some cases, Harry Gregson-Williams, and is really string section with brass section. And we always record them separately. So the idea of having a full orchestra in the studio at one time is almost now not a thing anymore, you know.
Yeah.
Because film scores have become more of a produced music than a performance music, you know.
I know what you mean.
Being in the studio and producing. So it's one thing to have a 8-bar cello melody and it's recorded terribly, you know. So in a film, that's a throwaway situation. It has to be recorded beautifully, and then it has to be treated back in the studio in a certain way, you know. So it's more like a producing music, like you would in contemporary music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting you say that, because a recent guest on this program was Murray Anderson, and he spoke about how sections are recorded like that and mixed and blended, so that, and sometimes lots of takes, but then you've just got one solo cello that you're doing the retakes with, not an entire orchestra. Before we go on, I'm intrigued now to hear the music you've chosen to share with us, Kyle. And what is your first piece?
So I think I'll jump to a musician, an artist that was a mentor to me, Zim Khawana. He sadly passed. So he was a saxophone, a multi-instrumentalist, but predominantly a saxophone player and a flautist in the South African jazz style. But also very global, used a lot of world ethnic music sounds within his South African jazz sound that he, in a sense, moved forward. So the piece is called Ibo Folo, and it's from his, for me, seminal album called Zymphonic Suites. And I was a student of Zim's, you know, in a very informal way, but a lot of his philosophy and approaches to music influenced me greatly in my early 20s. So we're going to listen to Zim with his band playing Ibo Folo.
Ukude pofoli nhao ya yamagesa. Ukude pofo li tau yamagesa. Ukude pofo li tau yamagesa. Diploma mi tao ya magesa Omna diploma mi tao ya magesa Omna diploma mi tao ya magesa Kukute pofo li tau ya magesa. Kitinge pofo li tau ya magesa. Kukute nukwe bi tau ya magesa. Kuku den mukwe bi tau ya magesa. I'm gonna go to the bathroom.
There's some music selected by my guest, Carl Shepherd. And Carl, I'm going to ask you to tell us what that was again after your lovely introduction.
Yes, so that was a piece by a mentor of mine, Zim Khawana. And that was Ibufolo, which in fact is his interpretation of a traditional Xhosa song.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Okay. You know, you spoke about Abdul Ibrahim earlier. Your mother taught in his world, and you therefore heard a lot of him, which must have been a big impact on you as a very young man, mm-hmm. listening to an artist like that playing the piano. Mm-hmm. Is that so? Is that what happened? Is that when you switched to the piano?
Yes, so much so that in my early career, my first three albums, I was heavily, on some level, criticized for being a sort of Abdullah clone.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
And I say it now sort of tongue-in-cheek, firstly, yes. But also can laugh about it because I know I've developed since then. But the interesting thing is, and I say interesting, of course it bothered me those years. But in America, in the jazz world, so in New York, for example, it's a requirement, actually, for young musicians to sound like older musicians.
Oh, that's interesting.
It shows a respect for what's come before, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So as a pianist, you cannot get away in America without sounding like Bud Powell, Duke Ellington, Thelonious Monk. And also, it's all chronological. So they expect you to know, all, you know, Duke Ellington, Thelonious Monk, Bud Powell, Herbie Hancock, McCoy, and it goes, you know. So I always found that the criticism on my end to be a little bit, what's the word?
Irrelevant.
In a sense, but also showed a lack of understanding from journalists and things like that. Because if they really understood what jazz is all about, it's all about lineage. We have this deep respect for what's come before. Because we've had to study it, you know, we study on a daily, and this is not in an institution, I mean your personal consumption of the music and study, this is what we're doing. We're always looking back to go forward, you know. So that's a little sort of, don't think I've ever said that publicly, but that's a little story.
Well,
about
now
it.
You have.
Yes, yes. And actually, I saw Abdullah perform in New York just over a week ago, and I was privileged to speak to him afterwards, and he's 91 now, you know.
Wow.
And I got a sense that now is the time I need to tell him a few things of, you know, express my appreciation for what he's done, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I've realized his impact all over the world. So wherever I've gone and had conversations with people from Tokyo to New York to Paris to Copenhagen or whatever, you realize the impact that he's had on the jazz world. So I had this moment to speak. There was a long line of people trying to speak to him after the concert. It was at the Lincoln Center in Manhattan. And I thanked him very, you know, sincerely. And I listed all the albums and the tunes of his.
Did he know you?
He knew me, yeah. He was like, surprising to me. You know, the last time I really was face-to-face with him was over 20 years ago, you know. And he remembered my mom, and I thanked him, and he had tears in his eyes. I think he really appreciated that a young musician from the same city as him really absorbed his music as I have, mm-hmm. you know, as a pianist. So that was a really nice moment, and it was recent, and I will carry that this moment for a long time.
It sounds like it, just listening to you talk about it so enthusiastically like that.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the piece of music we just heard with Zim, the fact that he played a saxophone, you don't play the saxophone, do you?
I do. Yes.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Okay. My goodness. How many instruments do you play? And you have to include the violin.
Yeah, really? I don't think it counts anymore.
Okay.
You know, I can get my way around the horn, the saxophone. Also very modestly, not for public consumption. But I don't mind.
Okay.
In my last score I played a little horn.
When you say horn, you mean
saxophone. Yeah, we in the jazz guys call it the horn.
Ah,
of course,
okay.
it's not a horn. It's not a French horn.
Right, from the orchestra.
So you wouldn't speak to classical music. As you can see, it's just different worlds, right? And then the violin, I can get my way around percussion, things like that. Yeah.
Okay. And your trio, tell me a little about your trio that you formed, because that's what you've toured a lot with.
Yes, yes.
It?
So my trio, it's the classic jazz trio setup, so piano, sorry, the classic piano trio setup. So piano, double bass, and drums. And we've been together, so the group is, on double bass is Shane Cooper, and on drums is Jono Sweetman. And we've been playing together for about 16 years. We've done quite a few albums, at least 5 or 6 together. And only recently, in 2024, we released a new album, but we had not recorded for 10 years before that one.
Right.
And also kind of stopped playing for a year or so. You know, maybe a concert.
Was there a reason for that?
I was just kind of busy with the scores and immersing myself in that. And then, you know, in 2024, I really had this nagging feeling that the trio's got to do something again. So we did an album. And since then, we've been playing quite often.
So when you say you've just come back from New York a few weeks ago, were you with the trio in New York or were you alone?
No. So when I was in New York recently, I was with a theater production that I wrote the music for. And it's a production by William Kentridge, the artist, the world famous visual artist who's a great friend of mine, mentor, and also frequent collaborator. So we were performing at a beautiful theater in Brooklyn, and this piece called Waiting for the Sibyl, it's with the classic William Kentridge set design, beautiful set design. 8 singers, Xhosa, Zulu, Pedi, Sotho, and so on. Myself on piano, and sort of the libretto by William. They call it a chamber opera. So the word opera, I think, is going to be confusing. Kind of modern contemporary, bordering on classical music and African music, somewhere in the middle.
Are we going to see it here?
So there's talk. So with a William Kentridge production, it's so expensive. It's William Kentridge. You know, William's work is for a different market.
I know what you mean.
It's for a different bracket of.
Yes.
So any theater in South Africa will struggle, but there is talk of it for 2026.
Okay. You know? Okay. Yeah. So now, what's your next piece of music?
Okay, so maybe we'll do something different. Let's go to... So the next piece of music is by Keith Jarrett. And also a very, very important musician for me as an influence.
So, also classical.
Yes. So Keith Jarrett, most widely known as easily the greatest jazz pianist to ever live. But also a wonderful classical musician.
He's recorded some Mozart piano concertos.
He's recorded Mozart, he's recorded Shostakovich,
he's
recorded Bach. He's done the preludes and the fugues, and beautifully. And I've listened to, on both sides, his jazz work and his classical work. And he's been just such a big influence. I think he's such a fantastic musician. And in my opinion, one of the greatest pianists to ever live. On either side of the aisle.
On either side of the fence,
yes,
whatever.
Yeah. So when I say that,
no, I know.
I know there's people in the classical world that will lynch me for that.
Nonsense. What is it called?
So we're going to listen to him playing with his trio, with Gary Peacock on the double bass and Paul Motion on the drums, playing a classic standard made famous by Miles Davis called Bye Bye Blackbird. Was a show tune.
Yes.
And this is this specific version is I chose for a reason. I think it's one of the great jazz solos and improvisations on the piano. I think it's up there with one of the greatest solos to ever be ever been played.
And this is
controversial stuff, controversial statements, but this is my opinion. And anyway, so it's Keith Jarrett Trio. Bye Bye Blackbird, live from the Deerhead Inn.
Thank you.
That was the Keith Jarrett Trio, Bye Bye Blackbird, and it was another choice of my guest, Kyle Shepherd. As I said, a leading South African pianist and film score composer. And just listening to that makes me realize, again, we spoke about Keith Jarrett as such a superb pianist, and you were very complimentary about him, Kyle. But I'm also very complimentary about his classical stuff, which you are as well, as you said. But one of the things I'm keen to talk to you about is your composition, your compositional life, because we've spoken about you taking up the piano, the influences of Abdullah Ibrahim and all that. But writing film scores is clearly a big part of your life. What attracted you to that? What attracted you to composition in the first place? Mm-hmm. Was it the improvisatory nature of jazz? Mm.
So I've been writing my own little tune since I started playing jazz and playing the piano, as I was telling you when I was 15, 16 years old. Always sort of found my fingers going to a little bit of something that was my own. I'm using air quotes to tell it for the listeners. And then, you know, as I was saying, my early influences like Abdullah, like Zim Lawana, they always wrote their own music and performed their own music. So it's always been if that's what I was looking up to, it was only natural that I would, you know, write my own pieces to play with my either trio or whatever. And it's kind of it's a big part of the jazz player to also, so it's like jazz composer / player / mm-hmm. performer. So this kind of package mm-hmm. that comes together. And always been doing that in the jazz world. But 10 years ago, I was approached by a director to write a score. And he had been coming to my jazz concerts, and sort of unbeknownst to me, he heard something in the concerts that made him think, you know, this guy could write a score. And when he called me, I'll never forget, when he called me, I told him, man, I don't think I can write a score. I have no idea how to do it. I have no idea about syncing to picture, all the technical. I don't have a studio. All I have is a room with a piano. I don't own a computer, you know. And film scoring these days is like the music technology that's involved is immense, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have these,
I know.
If you don't know how to work these things.
He didn't tell you to go away.
No. And then he was persistent. And then I wrote the score. It was for a movie called Nume Skoli, which eventually was South Africa's entry into the Academy Awards.
For oh, really?
26.
Oh, and that was your first score?
It was my first score. Wow. But it was by no means the score that got us there. But,
but at least you were the film, in the mix, so to speak.
I was in the mix, yeah. And that I wrote for 16 string players and synthesizers.
Okay, yeah.
And then, as they say, the rest is history. I've written, and now I'm actually delivering a score shortly in 2025. And that would be my 20th score.
And it has become a big part of your life, therefore.
Yes. So now I'm only touring about 3 to 5 times a year.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time I'm in my studio 10 to 12 hours a day. Yeah.
And is it something that you really enjoy, writing film scores specifically?
Yes. So as a big fan of film myself and
that helps.
And series and storytelling, I do enjoy it a lot. To be such a big part of the telling of a story, and music really is in a
Absolutely.
Film.
Absolutely.
I love the use of synthesizers. I love the use of the music technology, the computer, and so on. And I also like that writing for films and series. For example, I've done things for Netflix, which is probably my most popular.
Tell us some of them?
Yes. So, you know, I've done things like Unseen, Blood and Water, and Savage Beauty, Surviving Paradise. And these series have amassed well over 60 million hours of viewing.
Wow.
You know, so as a jazz pianist, which is a niche
market
and scene, going into that space where that's mass market stuff, I find it to be interesting still on a daily basis. So challenging myself to write music has integrity, tells the story, but also that the average person watching and listening, it has a way to enter
and draw them in.
That's
draw them in, as
yeah.
it were.
Yeah.
Because without going into too much detail, what sort of instruction do you get from the director? Does he show you the film and you have to fill in? Or does he tell you the style he wants? Or how do you get about, how do you compose a film score?
So every project is different. Every director is different. So some directors have the approach of, here's my film. You've got 30 days. I'll speak to you in 31 days. And they expect to have a score, and that's it.
Others, they expect it to be ready. The score
they expect to hear something. They expect to hear their score.
Yeah.
And before we record live musicians, everything's programmed into the computer these days. So I can produce what we call mock-ups. I can produce the mock-up in my studio, and it sounds 80 to 90% as realistic as real players would. The technology is so advanced now. And then you get to my first point, you get directors who are in my studio 3-4 days a week, micromanaging.
I was going to say,
yes,
not giving you the space for the 30 days.
But you know, what I realized about film, and it took me quite a few films to really accept this and come to terms with it and be at peace with it, is that when you're working on a film, you are part of a much larger whole.
Yes.
You are one part of a very big production.
Yes.
And that has producers, executive producers, people that sign the checks, people. So once I, this took me a while to really, you know, accept in a way or come to terms with. Once you understand that you're writing music towards that, you're part of this big organism, you know, which is freeing in a sense. It's my expression, but it's also telling a story that's not mine.
That's an interesting angle, actually. Yes. Yeah.
And also, I don't know if you've ever heard this saying, but some people that speak about Mozart, for example, you know, some people say Mozart is too easy for students, but too difficult for professionals.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? Because it's so deep, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
You might be able to get your fingers around it, but it's actually so what's behind the music and between the notes. So I try and think of that when I'm writing scores, you know. It's got to be able to, people have to be, like you said, drawn in, but it's got to have musical substance to it, you know. So that's my approach to it.
It sounds very challenging, Kyle, but at least it sounds also as it's hugely creatively rewarding for you in your role as a musician, both as a performer and a composer.
Mm-hmm.
So let's have another piece of music. What have you got to share with us?
So the next selection is Abdullah Ibrahim.
Aha.
In fact, this is from a live album he recorded when he was still called Dollar Brand.
Mm-hmm.
It's from an album called South Africa. It was in the heart of the struggle years. And Abdullah was making music as protest and part of the struggle in exile. So this is from an album recorded in Berlin. And it's also a traditional song called Siyahamba Namhlanje. And I've always loved his interpretation of traditional songs, you know, whether it be Cape music or music from elsewhere in the country.
Oh!
There's the great Abdullah Ibrahim, and another choice of my guest, Carl Shepherd. What was that that we were listening to, Carl?
That was Siyamba Namhlanje from his album called South Africa.
As you say, when he was still Dollar Brand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Carl, the other thing I want to ask you, before you're allowed to go, is about your travels, because as you said, you're a young man, but it seems to me that you've been all over the world. Mm-hmm. You've been to many of the big cities. How did it start? How did you get the break to go overseas?
I think probably a lot of luck.
Okay. Some talent, easily, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe a bit, yeah. But I've always been part of projects and part of bands and so on that have been touring, you know.
Okay.
This is why I say luck.
Yes.
Touring with Zim Hawana, for example, for a bit. Touring with other elder musicians that I happened to be, you know, they asked me to be part of their groups. And recently with William Kentridge, we really traveled extensively in the last 3 years or so. But it started when I was 18. And my first trip was to Norway, and it was a kind of educational tour.
Was it your first trip overseas?
That was my first time on the plane.
Okay, right.
And ever since then, it's actually now been 41 countries.
Wow, you know, that's not bad.
And for example, I toured probably most frequently to Japan. I've done about 12 tours there. Some of my albums, I've actually done albums that are exclusively available in Japan, so I have quite a relationship with them over there. Other than that, mostly Western Europe. That's a big one for us jazz musicians. And as you mentioned in the intro, really played some of the big cities and some of the great venues.
Yes, you know, goodness me.
Sydney Opera.
Yes, imagine playing
New
there.
New York and et cetera.
So dare I ask you, do you have a favorite place, or is that difficult?
It's difficult.
Okay.
But you certainly feel I have the big, the diamond, so to speak, you know, playing Carnegie and the Barbican in London, where the Beatles played.
That's right.
Sydney Operas, where everyone's played. Halls in Tokyo, famous jazz clubs in Tokyo, Châtelet in Paris. And the list goes on. So those are definitely standout moments. I think any musician
would love that exposure as
yes,
well.
Yes, yes. And there's many great musicians who perhaps don't get that opportunity. So, I do count myself. There's luck involved.
there's a bit of hard work
and talent, and then also just a lot of being in the right place.
How many albums do you have out at the moment?
So jazz albums, it's seven albums.
Okay.
And then, as I said, as a score composer,
yes,
it's about
many more.
Yeah, it's about 20 scores now.
When I was introducing you, I spoke of someone saying you were celebrated for your distinctive style that transcends genres. What does that mean? Can you describe that?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, my styling as a jazz pianist incorporates a lot of South African music influences. So I've always had a long interest and intrigue in South African traditional music, and I suppose you picked up on that from my selection.
Indeed.
And I always found it interesting to listen to Xhosa music or the music of Princess Magogo, who's from the Zulu tradition, and take little parts of it and then transfer it onto my instrument, which is a Western classical instrument, as we all know. So kind of unusual to combine those elements, but it is something that pianists like Abdullah was doing, Bekim Seleko was doing, Hilton Schilder was doing, and many South African pianists. So my sound is within that, but then also from my classical background and other music and so on, incorporating all of this. So for example, on the recent trio album that we did, we cover some rock tunes as well.
Oh, right.
You know, so
right.
We do Teardrop from Massive Attack. I do a very obscure arrangement that I wrote of Don't Stop Believing from The Journey.
Why do you say obscure?
Kind of surrealist version of it. You know?
Oh, interesting.
So not,
okay.
Not, you know, odd time signatures. And
are you quite wild with your harmonies? Do you have a distinctive harmonic
sound? I'm more a rhythmic guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so okay. So more... More advanced with rhythm.
Okay.
Harmonically, I'm more simple. Melodically, maybe a bit. But I do like advanced rhythm.
So as you said, with different time signatures and
yes.
things like that.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And Kyle, as we approach the end of the program now, what's next? A couple of months ago, you were in New York. You've been in Cape Town for a while. So is there anything exciting on your diary just at the moment?
Yes, in 2026, I'm very much looking forward to, in March, my trio play what I'm sure will be a beautiful sunset concert at Kirstenbosch.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, very
so
nice.
So one always dreams of that. That will also go in the list of, okay. You know, I mean, just the setting, the backdrop.
Have you not played there before?
No.
Oh, gosh, no. That's something. No. That is something.
So the setting, the backdrop,
oh,
and also
lovely.
It's my hometown.
Yes,
you
yes.
Know, so
yes.
I'm very much looking forward to that. There are other things in the pipeline.
Right.
Scores and things I can't speak about at the moment, but
enough.
I urge everybody to please keep an ear out and
we'll keep
and
an ear
we'll
out.
See you around. Yeah.
It's been inspiring talking to you, Kyle, because of your clear passion about music, all sorts of music, both sides of the fences, as you joked earlier, and also just your enthusiasm for film music. So now we're going to have to end. And what are you going to share with us to end?
Yes, so I wanted to play a more modern pianist, so a younger pianist who's very, very influential on a few generations now of jazz pianists around the world. His name's Brad Muldaur. He also has recorded classical music, Bach. He recently recorded and released Bach a couple of years ago. So a wonderful...
In its original form.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
He recorded some song cycles and things. And just a great jazz pianist. And he's known for doing jazz covers of contemporary music, rock music, other contemporary music, and playing it with a trio, jazz piano trio. So I love this. I really like when he does this. And we're going to listen to Brad Muldaur Trio playing Wonderwall, which is an Oasis track. And this is live from the Village Vanguard in 2008.
Kyle, while we listen to that, may I say thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
I know that you're a very busy man, mm-hmm. and you gave us some time, so thank you for that. And we'll keep a lookout following your career.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be here.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.